Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcome to now.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
That game.
Prescott in the gun, runs up the middle.
That call.
It's the right decision.
That moment.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Did he spike it in time?
That's the end of the game.
What normally takes down the Cowboys and what they have to battle and what they might have to fight through and maybe not. The head coaching, decision making.
The Rich Eisen Show.
How about them Cowboys?
Today's guests, ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky, two-time Emmy Award-winning actor Eric Stonestreet, plus Fox Sports rules analyst Mike Pereira. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Okay, everybody. Yes, it is a big Monday show with five of the six games of Super Wild Card Weekend in the books. I am your humble host here in Los Angeles, California, where we've got that sixth game tonight between the Arizona Cardinals and the Los Angeles Rams. I will be doing the pregame and halftime festivities for Westwood One Radio this evening. So it's a two-a-day for me, but it's all good in that hood. It is playoff time in the NFL, and good to see you over there, Christopher Brockman. How are you, sir?
Rich, I'm great.
Mike Del Tufo is not here doing that one thing for that other thing that he's doing that we don't know about. Good to see you, Jason Feller. How are you? TJ Jefferson here on the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, like we always do at this time, Rich. How about them Cowboys?
How about them?
How about them?
How about them? How about them?
Winners or tie. This was how coming out today.
And the fact that a man whose team and the fact that a man whose team got boat raced out of the playoffs could belly laugh at you in this same weekend. Yeah. In this very same weekend.
Thank God for the Cowboys, because everyone forgot about our game.
They got curb stomped. I mean, we only lost by six, but you know, I know it's coming. I know it's coming.
Okay, here we go.
You know, it's all good.
Let's jump into this, shall we? Let's just jump into the deep end of the pool. The varsity end of the pool.
That's
right?
Why I wore this jacket.
Let's just do it.
Get it out the way.
No.
Let's move on.
No. I mean, because there's lots to discuss. Let's put it that way. there were two ways that this was going to go. Okay, and obviously there's a third way. The third way is that the Cowboys had a stout 49ers team in, and both teams were playing at the top of their game and trading punches like two heavyweight fighters, and then one team who had the ball last would make the play and win the game. And that's one way that many playoff games have gone. Well, not lately. It's been 17 straight games, I believe, that I saw NFL games where there hasn't been a lead change in the fourth quarter. It's been a while. Obviously, the game could have gone that way. But we all knew there were two ways this was going to go, that the Dallas Cowboys championship season aspirations, the games that we've seen this year that lend credence from the opener in Tampa, where Dak came back and threw for over 400 yards and almost won that game. The game against the Washington football team just a few weeks ago, seeing them put up 50 against a Philadelphia Eagles team that wasn't playing their starters, but still, you got to beat who's in front of you and get that momentum going. And this team had a 4,000 yard passer and 1,000 yard rusher and 1,000 yard receiver and a 10 sack guy and a 10 interception guy. And this is a championship quality team, and they were going to win this game and move forward and confirm the belief that this team could win the Super Bowl. That's one way it was going to go. And then the other way it was going to go is that they were going to have a fever dream type nightmare day where it would be full of self-inflicted wounds and mistakes and penalties and turnovers and sacks. And this team would go down in the playoffs despite having a 4,000-yard passer and a 1,000-yard rusher and a 1,000-yard receiver and a 10-sack guy and a 10-interception guy. And who knew? Most of us. That it was the latter, and it would be the latter, and it was the latter. That happened. We saw it yesterday. We saw the 49ers come in and hit the Dallas Cowboys in the mouth. I saw that one coming. I picked him. I thought it. Brockman picked him. He thought it. Many others thought it. Hit him in the mouth. 10-0 lead. 10-0 lead. And so much is discussed about the end of this game, and we will hit that in a moment. But don't forget, in advance, Cowboys didn't pick up their first down of the game until they were down 10-0. They didn't even have 120 yards total offense in the first half of this game. 49ers came in and hit him in the mouth, but the Cowboys defense kept on forcing them to settle for field goals, keeping this thing afoot for Dallas. And sure enough, the Jimmy G interception took place, and it changed everything. And this game, with 16 minutes ago, and the Dallas Cowboys down 16 with 16 minutes ago, and we were seeing all the sad Cowboy fans and the nervous Jones in their sweet shots. It started to change, started to switch. The Dallas Cowboys did score a touchdown off of that interception, and it was a tight game, a totally tight game. But the Cowboys made too many mistakes. 14 penalties. 14 penalties. I repeat, 14 penalties they had in the game.
So ridiculous.
And they still had a shot to win it. Because the 49ers were making some bizarre maneuvers, like, say, with this running game performing as well as possible, still throwing it with Jimmy G, playing with those pieces of fire. Don't forget, after they did get an interception, they handed it off to Deebo Samuel. He's so incredible. And they were running the football so well. And then on 4th-and-1 at midfield with 6 and change to go, they punted it. What was that all about? Well, the defense was balling out. Because, sure enough, the Dallas Cowboys with a sack and 3 consecutive incompletions gave the ball back to San Francisco. And now all the Niners had to do was just burn all of Dallas's timeouts and get a couple first downs and end the game. And they got the first down by penalty. Randy Gregory mysteriously tackling the guy who's trying to block him. Tackled the offensive lineman. And that seemingly ended the game. All the Niners had to do was get a first down. And it looked like they did. Until they didn't. And Dallas had another shot. Because they re-spot the football properly. And for some reason, San Francisco decides to motion their best offensive lineman on a friggin' quarterback sneak. And Jimmy G snaps it too soon before Trent Williams is set. Now San Francisco's got to punt the ball. And they have to rescind the bye-byes that they were waving to all the Dallas faithful. What was that about? A fever dream on both sides broke out. And then Dak started making plays. Nice little hook and ladder. A couple other plays where San Francisco was letting Dallas get out of bounds. And then suddenly San Francisco's like, you know what? DeMeco Ryan's a defensive coordinator with a few ticks left on the clock. No timeouts left for Dallas. You know what? We're just going to basically build 2 49er walls on each side of the boundaries, you know? That's we're just going to line up all our defenders on the sidelines and give you the middle of the field, and Dallas took it. Set the hook with that bait. No, there was no bait because Dallas was practicing this. They had it. They had it. They had the plan. They had the whole plan. The plan is for Dak to get as many yards as possible so they don't have to fling it from the 40-yard line, which, by the way, not a bad spot to fling it from. Okay? You know, not a bad spot to fling it from. But let's run it. But Dak's got to get down in time. Then he doesn't get down in time. And remarkably, hands the ball to his own senator spot. I didn't see the Nickelodeon game. But did they tell the kids you're not allowed to spot your own football in the National Football League? Folks, you can't spot your own football in the National Football League. So you're either somebody who needs to find the official to spot it, or if you do give it to your center, the center's got to know to find the official to spot it. And the official whose job is to spot it needed to get through Dak and large human beings in order to get on the other side of the line of scrimmage to spot it. He did move the football a little bit too much for my liking and finally spotted it, and there is no Hail Mary. Instead of getting two Hail Mary shots, the Cowboys get no Hail Mary shots. End of game. Dak Prescott after the game said something I think he wants to take back. I'll be very honest with you. Totally out of character for him. My colleague Jane Slater from the NFL Media Group got video from a friend of hers. She tweeted it out, and it was fans throwing stuff on the field. Okay. One of them, DeMarcus Lawrence, took his helmet and swatted away a water bottle with it. Dak was asked about that video after the game.
Dak, what do you think about the fans throwing your balls on the field there at the very end? Did you see that? I think one of them hit Tank Lawrence.
No, I didn't see that. That's sad. I mean, you're talking about a team. You're talking about men that come out each and every day of their lives and give everything to the sport, give everything to this game of football. Nobody wants to succeed more than we want to succeed. I understand fans and the word fan for fanatic. I get that. But to know everything that we put into this day in and day out, try our hardest. Nobody comes in the game wanting or expecting to lose. And for people to react that way when you're supposed to be a supporter and be with us through thick and thin, that's tough.
I think they were aiming at the referees.
Yeah. They were at the referees. Well,
credit to them then.
That's a take.
Yeah.
They weren't doing it.
Oh, credit to them.
Same officials, I guess, that gave you a shot because they re-spotted a football. And then properly called Trent Williams for motion during the quarterback sneak that would have ended it. That gave you that shot that you kind of didn't really deserve to have because they did properly call Randy Gregory for his third penalty on the day, tackling a defender for defensive holding. Also, same officials that properly called not one, but back-to-back false starts on the first drive of the second half for the Dallas Cowboys. Also, the same officials that were first to call delay of game on the Cowboys for a bizarre, the most bizarre follow-up to a successful fake punt I've ever seen.
Great fake punt, though.
Great fake punt.
It was incredible.
Incredible fake punt. By the way, kudos to McCarthy and Bones Fossil for saying go for it because you needed a spark. You got the spark, and then you kept the special teams out there. For what? On first down? Like you're going to fake another fake punt on first down? Or you're going to force the Niners to burn a timeout because they didn't have the right guys on the field? Fred Warner was even kind of with his arms outstretched as the same umpire that was front and center for the last play of the game is standing over the ball forever because he kept on giving the Niners a chance to match up because Dak and the offense came running out on the field too late. Blaming the refs. That's rich. You've got to be kidding. With all due respect, that is very uncharacteristic of Dak to say something like that. Cowboys deserved to lose that game multiple times over before they finally lost it. Multiple times over. And now they've got to sit on that. Now they got to sit on that for weeks and months. Run it back with Dak, of course. Zeke, I don't know. Pollard seems to have a lot more burst than him. for big plays. Sure, Cooper and Gallup. You know, that's your $100 million offense with Cooper and Zeke and Dak. And they had the same number of playoff wins this year as my Jets. That's not a shot in your direction. Trust me. I feel for you, brother. Because that's a heck of a team that shot itself in the foot so many times, they don't have any toes left. Man. And I saw this stat in the New York Times. The Dallas Cowboys have as many home wins in the playoffs in that building than the Alabama Crimson Tide. Okay?
Yikes.
Not good, Bob. Not great.
Not great, Bob.
I don't know if you do what you do if you're Jerry Jones right now. But I'll tell you what, and I do want to say this. The Dallas Cowboys may be the first of many teams, and I know I'm talking about the number one seed in this here playoffs, but the Dallas Cowboys are definitely the first, and maybe the first of multiple NFC teams that are going to be looking at the Los Angeles Rams saying, couldn't finish off the Niners when you had them, right? Week 18, you had them. You had them down 17-0. Let them kick a field goal right before the half. Then you tied them up, and then you took the lead. And you couldn't get a first down, could you? Had to leave Jimmy G out there on that field to go 88 yards with no timeouts and 87 seconds, and he did it in 61. Couldn't win it in overtime either, could you? Let the Niners off the mat and in the tournament, and now the Cowboys are out. And they're coming for the Green Bay Packers next. And if you think Shanahan and LaFleur didn't shake hands the last time they saw each other, this one's going to be blood sport on Saturday night of divisional playoff weekend.
Dude, that's going to be awesome.
And I don't know how many teams might lament the fact that the Rams didn't finish off the Niners when the Niners were most prone to be finished. Because a team that I saw yesterday was stout and very physical. Just got to clean up those mistakes. Just a clean sheet from Jimmy G. Other than that, give me a clean sheet out of him. Give me that decision back on not going for it on fourth and one midfield. Niners could have just finished off the Cowboys right then and there. Mm. But Dallas is done. Dallas is done, and now the question is, what about Mike McCarthy? So I'm going to ask that question to Dan Orlovsky, who joins us in hour number two. Coming up next is Mike Pereira, because I want to ask him about the mechanics at the end of that game. And also, by the way, congrats to Bengals fans. You have won a playoff game for the first time in 30 years, absolutely. And we're talking about a touchdown margin of difference in a play that was so wild with Burrow finding Boyd in the end zone with a whistle blowing just as the ball was whistling in the air towards his hands. Did the Raiders defenders let up? Was the ball already in Boyd's possession? Because the rule is, if it's an inadvertent whistle, you've got to replay the down. They got together and said that it was, in fact, still a touchdown because it was. Burrow never stepped out. Boyd caught the ball. The rule says you got to replay it, and they didn't. And then the league said afterwards that the whistle blew after the catch. That is not true. Normally when they say you got to play to the echo of the whistle isn't echoing before the ball hits the hands of the receiver who catches it. I don't buy that one. I want to ask Mike Pereira what he thinks about that one. The Kansas City Chiefs took care of the Steelers. 5 touchdowns for Patrick Mahomes in 10 and a half minutes time. Kelsey threw one. A lineman caught one. It was a whole big Chiefs offensive hootenanny in a game where they couldn't do anything in the first quarter. And they were trailing. Eric Stone Street was there. I think he has some thoughts on nouveau riche money in the direction of Joe Manganiello. Steeler fan who used that phrase towards Chiefs fans that it was nouveau riche money. I think he's got something to say on that. Bills demolished the Patriots. Demolished them. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Tom Brady was terrific.
Yeah, let's talk about this stuff.
It didn't want to come out of the game.
Then there's tonight. We'll discuss that with Dan Orlovsky. And then, of course, there's you at 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Not one, but two overreaction Mondays. There's so much to overreact to in the Cowboys' loss to the Niners, or Niners' win over Dallas. Chris, you've created an overreaction Monday just on that game alone.
Yes, Mitch and I were talking last night, and we were just like, Cowboy. We're like, we'll just do our own segment.
Corny. But you also have another overreaction Monday on the rest
about
of
the other game.
Very good. Let's take a break. By the way, it's Martin Luther King Day, NBA Day, and MLK Day, and there's lots to discuss on that front. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. We're back with Mike Pereira to talk about everything that went down with the Zebras over the weekend right here on this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. Hey, folks, it's time for the NFL draft, which means for me, I need a good night's sleep, because if I don't have one, I'm just not myself. You know the deal. You know exactly how important it is to have quality sleep. It's a game changer for all of us. So Sleep Number helps me. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's setting is 70. We both get a great night's sleep because we could adjust the firmness of our mattress on each side. Improve your quality sleep because Sleep Number learns how you sleep thanks to their smart beds and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, so much to discuss in terms of big-time plays. You know, people are rightfully talking about Micah Hyde's grab for an interception on that Saturday night in Buffalo, but that's not even close to the most important and greatest and most difficult catch made on playoff weekend. It happened yesterday on live television.
Rolla. Oh, jeez.
You can hit it.
Look at the speed! Go! Look at the speed!
Oh, he don't get one catch. Yes.
Got it. He's come done tough and everything.
Is that Brocklin?
Yes.
By the way, the crowd loves
that. That's a sloppy looking catch.
Oh, yeah. We'll be talking about this on my show tomorrow. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I caught it.
Yep. Now, let me tell you how difficult that is.
Did you hurt yourself?
Let me tell you how difficult that is. I was playing mentally hurt yesterday. Yesterday was the first time in my 25-year career that I overslept.
Really?
I missed the first two segments of Game Day Morning yesterday.
What?
I am mortified. Mortified. Like an 18-year-old missing a class in college. I snapped awake 12 minutes before air, said, let me just take a look at my phone because I thought I had two more hours to go, and I really had 12 minutes to get to work.
And it was 5:48?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
What time's your alarm usually set for?
3:30 in the morning.
And what, and you woke up at 5:48?
Yeah.
Wow.
How many missed calls do you have?
A bunch. And so I ran upstairs. Susie, get the hell out of the house. And the first thing I did is I grabbed, you know, whatever shirt and suit I had there. Normally I get dressed there. Mm-hmm. I grabbed a shirt that barely fits with my tuck in.
Right.
I just grabbed whatever I could grab.
Oh, my God.
And so the whole show, that's all I was thinking about. My clean sheet of my career is over. I was mortified for my colleagues and who, you know, Mooch, Irv, and Kurt did the first two segments in, like, comfy chairs. You know, they, you know, awful. and I was thinking about it all day. And so as I'm going out for this catch, I'm thinking to myself, this is not my day. Watch, I'm about to drop this thing. And then as I reach out for it, my shirt comes undone. And it was a bright sunshine day. Kurt threw it, and the ball was spinning like it was like that NFL Films zoom in on a spinning football. And then you zip up.
And
it hit, it's all, I look back, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm just not. And then I juggled it and grabbed it. And I was so relieved. I just wanted to go home.
Did you forget the alarm? Is that what it was?
No.
Slept right through it.
When I looked right at it, it was like it had snoozed.
Oh,
and it
my
was just,
God.
And it was still like I slept through it.
Beautiful catch.
I have never in my days had a day and start like that in my career.
Oh, my goodness. It's the most terrifying feeling ever.
Awful.
Yeah.
Because we've talked about all the times you have dreams. Could be the middle of the day when
it actually happened.
Sleep.
It actually happened in real life.
God.
But,
I'm so sorry.
But I caught it.
Oh my
back
God.
Here on
never
the Rich Eisen Show, 844-204-RICH. Number to dial. Yeah,
the audacity.
Okay, so there's so much to get to today. The way that the Cowboys game ended, the huge controversial sequence, what happened in Cincinnati was a touchdown when Burrow stayed in bounds and found Boyd in the end zone, but the officials thought he'd stepped out of bounds, blew a whistle. What happened there? Let's turn to our friend, longtime caller into the program, former head of NFL refs, now Fox Rules analyst forever and a day, Mike Pereira. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great, Rich.
Let's jump in it with both feet, starting with the end of the Cowboys 49ers game. Did you have a problem with the mechanics, the way it all went down at the end of the game on Sunday?
A little bit. You know, it's interesting. I flew from Tampa to Dallas, and landed in Dallas with Troy and our producer, Richie Zients, and we got the game on our phone. It was the last minute. So that's really all we saw. The game was the last minute.
Okay.
And we were looking at this thing, and, oh, the 49ers, fourth and one, the measurement, oh, they're short, now they're going to go for it. Then they didn't get set, and then it goes to the last play, and we're watching this on a phone in the airplane. And we're going, what is it over? We're like everybody else, you know, watching it. And you know, obviously that's been the discussion point today. And I think the thing is, to me, look, people are saying that the umpire and the referee were so far back. Reuben George is the umpire. And, you know, they line up 15 yards behind the line of scrimmage. And when Dak steps back, they step back. And so they had a long way to go. And so I think they worked their butts off to get to the spot. Really, though, to me, and we have discussed this before, the one thing when you're in such a hurry up like that, don't worry about a yard putting the ball back. I mean, he could see that the line of scrimmage guys on the outside had a spot on the solid line, but just touch the ball and get out of there. And if you want to adjust it, if there's still time left on the clock, then you can put it back a yard. When they look at this, that's what they're going to say. Hey, if this scenario hits again, you've got to touch the ball. Okay, and it's hard. You got to go through players that are already in three-point stances and ready to go, but you've got to touch the ball. Touch it and get out. Don't worry about moving it back the yard because, I mean, that's hardly relevant at this point at that point of time anyways. But, you know, it was very interesting to watch the last minute of the game and then listen to the post-game comments by the announcer, Babe Laufenberg, who didn't talk at all about the umpire getting the ball. He talked more about the 14 penalties that the Cowboys committed, and he said they earned every one of them, except one, maybe a little iffy, and he talked about them being undisciplined. And I have a hard time putting that last play where maybe they would have gotten a playoff. I have a hard time putting the total focus of the Cowboys lost on that. But that being said, I think mechanically it could have been handled a little bit better.
So the 2 cents would be, one, in the same way that Dak would have homework and the Cowboys would have homework to drill into Dak if he needs it, to find the official, to give the football to the official to spot. Don't give it to your center to spot. In the same way, you would tell the umpire, just touch it, get out of the way. They're going to spike it anyway. Then you respot the ball before the end of the game. And that would be the homework for the ump.
And I must tell you, and I thought about this last night, in some ways I accept part of the blame on this.
Okay.
Because if you go back to 2009, after the 2009 season, before I left in 2010, I'm the one that pushed for the change, the mechanics change. to move the umpire into the offensive backfield. And I knew that it created a hole. I recognized that, but I was more interested in umpire safety because I was losing two a year. They were getting killed. They were getting used as picks. So I said, let's move him to the offensive side. I think if he'd have been in his old spot, he would have gotten there quicker. And that was a concern. And we at that point said, hey, if it's a ball downfield and the back judge can get to the ball, do it. But it's still the umpire's primary responsibility. And it is one of those situational things that come up that probably that mechanics changed kept the umpire from getting, obviously, if he's lined up behind the linebackers, he would have probably gone right with the team down there and would have been there quicker. But so I guess I accept some of the blame for that.
Fox Rules analyst Mike Pereira, former head of NFL refs, right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Let's get to the game in Cincinnati. This was a huge conversation for much of the day Saturday, and it's gotten knocked off of a lot of Twitter exchanges because of what happened in Dallas. But the whistle being blown as Joe Burrow let loose with a touchdown pass, because I guess the official thought that Burrow was out of bounds. The whistle clearly hit, sounded before the ball hit Taj Boyd's hands in the end zone. What is your opinion of that sequence from that game?
Well, my opinion is that I'm really pretty disappointed and actually very concerned. And I did express those sentiments to the league because basically what they attempted to do and what they ended up doing was ignore the ruling that was made initially on the field that Burrow stepped out of bounds. That was the ruling that was made. And yet he didn't. I get that he didn't. So then, and the claim is they tried to do this on the field all their own. The claim is then they tried to factor in when the whistle blew. We've never gotten to that point where either on the field or in replay that you try to factor in when the whistle blew. I mean, you basically, especially in replay, you try to ignore that element. The ruling kills the play. And there are even casebook plays that say, if the runner's ruled, the passer is ruled out of bounds, it's not reviewable. You can't go back and review that. Yet we had a play, I think it was last year with Buffalo, same scenario, that it was ruled that the quarterback was out of bounds, and they let it be challenged. And they actually overturned it when it wasn't reviewable. And I went nuts in that scenario, too. But the feeling was, well, let's try to correct everything. And that's what I voiced to the league. I'm concerned that you're using this video assistant expedited review too far to get involved in plays that take you into trying to determine when did a whistle blow. I mean, that's like almost impossible to do. And you look at it on TV, and yeah, it blew right before the catch was made.
Yes.
But again, we're ignoring the ruling that was made on the field. And I said to him, if you rule that a runner steps out of bounds at the 10-yard line and he didn't, you say it's not reviewable, you can't do anything about it because it was ruled dead. And so I'm frustrated by that play. Okay, maybe they got it right. Maybe they did. But I still think the whistle blew before the ball was actually caught. But I just don't think we should have ever gotten to that point. We cannot set aside a rule to try to get the play right. And that's where I feel we're headed. And that's no secret. I mean, I voiced it to the league. It's concerning to me. It's very concerning to me that we're trying to go too far to try to get the field call right on the field when I know they're in contact with everybody. They're in contact with the replay official that could say to them, hey, he didn't step out of bounds. Well, they said, well, they made this whole decision on the field. It makes it very suspicious, and I look at that play. If it was me back in my day,
yes,
I would have said, well, we ruled he was out of bounds when he threw the pass. That's it. It's over. You can't do anything about that.
So basically what you're saying is, again, the play should have been blown dead the minute that they thought that he had stepped out of bounds, and that is not reviewable, right? Because he had right. So
regardless of the whistle,
correct. And so they inappropriately used replay to keep a possibility of a touchdown alive that they should have replayed anyway, right? Well, because of the whistle in the air. Is that what you're saying?
Well, they said they made the decision completely on the field without the use of replay.
I don't know about that.
I have a hard time buying that. It wasn't a replay review because essentially, and I didn't watch it, so I couldn't see, you know, the actions of Jerome Bulger. I don't know how long it took to get to the thing, but it's still, it's really bothersome to me. I like this expedited review. I do. I like the video assistance. I do. But I don't like it when it brings in elements of the game where, you know, even replay, if it went to replay, wouldn't allow you to review it. So I don't know the word to use, Rich. I mean, I think I'm disappointed, maybe disillusioned. But I think they've gone too far to end up trying to determine when did a whistle blow on the field. And trying to make that determination, you know, based on when a ball was first touched. And so you make a decision, and then it turns out it was wrong because the whistle was before the ball was touched. It's
confusing to a lot of people, Mike. I got to be honest. This is confusing because, you know, the conversation is they should have replayed the down because the whistle was inadvertent, and that is the rule.
I don't believe that. I know what John Perry said. I know what others said. The fact is that the whistle blew because the official felt that the
player was out of bounds,
stepped on the line, and that's why it blew. I don't call that inadvertent. I call that killing the play because you had a ruling on the field of him being down out of bounds. So I don't buy the inadvertent whistle. It was blown for a reason, and that when that was blown. Or the whistle was blown because you felt that the runner stepped out of bounds. That's it, and you to me, you have to stay with that ruling.
It's incredible. So instead of it being replayed because of an inadvertent whistle, the whistle was not inadvertent and actually blew a play dead. That's not reviewable. That they went ahead and reviewed and installed the touchdown.
Very simple to me. The next play should have been Cincinnati's ball from the spot where Burroughs was ruled to have stepped out of bounds, period. That's me.
And so a couple more for you, Mike Pereira, right here on the Rich Eisen Show. On Sunday Night Football, you know, the game was kind of out of reach, but Steelers fans are wondering. Nick Allegretti, the big man who scored a touchdown last night, threw T.J. Watt to the ground before going out on his route, and there was no call. Is that legal for, I guess, an eligible tackle to just throw someone to the ground? Normally, that would be a hold because he's an ineligible receiver.
Could be a hold, could be offensive pass interference. But if it occurs at the line of scrimmage, it can't be offensive pass interference. But I'd like to be more knowledgeable on that, but I just didn't see it.
Okay, yeah.
I saw a highlight of him catching the pass, but yes. I did not see him released from the line of scrimmage.
Yes, he threw the would-be defensive player of the year to the ground like a rag doll before being wide open because T.J. Watt was on the ground. And Steelers, yeah, it was right around the line.
Was T.J. trying to rush the passer? You know, was he trying to contact... You know,
I think TJ got up with the international symbol of where's the flag and his hands outstretched, which made it seem like he thought he was being engaged by a blocking tackle and was thrown to the ground and then turned around and saw the tackle catch the ball for the touchdown. So if he says I'm an eligible receiver and is deemed as such, and this is all within the line of scrimmage vicinity, that's legal to throw him down on the ground. Is what you're saying.
It's legal in terms of offensive pass interference because in order for it to have an interference foul, it has to be more than a yard downfield. But I would have to see the play to see if Watt was trying to go through a gap or trying to get into the backfield. I'd have to see that because it's much like a screen. You know, if a lineman who wants to get out on the screen, if he throws a player to the ground, a defender to the ground, then that is holding. And it could be the same scenario in this case, but I don't know. The only one thing I can say is it could not have been pass interference.
All right, and last one for you. Just going back to the end of the Cowboys 49ers game, the head ref said afterwards that they did not converse with New York City as to whether there was no time left on the clock in regulation, made that ruling themselves and got off the field. You're laughing already. So
standard lingo
for what?
And they may have done that. Look, the first thing I looked at is when I was huddled around Troy's phone was how much time could have been left on the clock when he spiked it, you know, because if they deem that the game is over and you look at it and the ball hits the ground with 1 second to go, not reviewable. There has to be 2 seconds or more on the clock for replay to put time, those 2 seconds or more back on the clock. And I don't think there was even 1 second. But I promise you that because that actually is reviewable, they may not have conversed with New York, but they would have conversed to the replay official before they left the field to make sure that the time had expired. No conversation about the mechanics of putting the ball down or that, but replay is responsible for making sure there is not 2 or more seconds left on the clock. And if there's not, then the game is over. So I'm sure that was the conversation.
And you have no problem with the game being ruled over then?
No.
Okay. Mike Pereira, thank you for the time. Let's do this again down the line. We'll see you soon.
You got it. Take care.
There is former NFL VP of officiating and Fox Sports NFL rules analyst Mike Pereira here on the Rich Eisen Show. Okay, there you go. So you Mike go. Pereira says that the touchdown from Burrow to Boyd that everybody has spent the last 48 hours saying should have been replayed, should have been 3rd and 4 from the Vegas 10 again, says it should have been 4th down from wherever Burrow stepped out of bounds. That's what should have happened, because the minute that the whistle was blown to say he was out of bounds, that's not reviewable. And yet Boger and his crew got together and said, well, the ruling on the field is now he didn't step out of bounds, touchdown. That's the problem. That the officiating crew in New York City is like, yeah, he didn't step out of bounds, so let's remove that from the equation. And, you know, the whistle happened after the catch, touchdown. Let me just say this for you folks in Cincinnati. I am sorry that this is the conversation that everybody's stuck on after you finally win. I am sorry for that, because that's not deserved. Burrow is so good.
So good.
Chase is so good.
Incredible.
Your coach gets it. How about them giving out game balls to the city of Cincinnati, then handing it personally that night in bars, like in establishments,
going up to bars and just like, this is for you.
This is what amazing. It's about. Burrow showing up to work in that sort of whacked out puffy jacket and then showing up in shades afterwards saying, I've still got work to do. And they do. They got the Titans and Derrick Henry and all of that, but they won a playoff game and they were terrific in winning that playoff game. The Raiders did what they had to do and what they did all year long, which is never give up despite all of their adversity. And we'll discuss that. But just to linger here for the Bengals, congratulations. Obviously that was the margin of difference and we're all saying that shouldn't have been a touchdown. It should have been. There shouldn't have been a whistle. He was inbounds. That guy was open. Did the Raiders defender let up? It did look like that, but what is he? I don't know. The ball had already, I think, broken the plane of the goal when the whistle blew. By rule, he should have been out of bounds because they they erroneously blew the whistle. But if it's an inadvertent whistle, they should have replayed the down. Right. Either way, I don't think the Bengals were the better team. And Burrow is stupendous, and you are so lucky. You've got him, and Chase, and the rest of that offense, and the coach, and the defense opportunistic. And that kicker is just as talented as everybody else that's young and fresh and new to the league. He's terrific, that McPherson. He's nails. And that comes in handy, man, when you're going to the Tennessee Titans with Derrick Henry, the diminisher, coming back, and you need every point you can get. And if your team starts to stall right around the 35 and 40 or the 35 and 33, this kid's going to make it. And I just think it's all good for you. And I'm sorry that this is the conversation. Congratulations. You deserve it. Soak it in. We'll take a break. When we come back, there's a couple of aspects about the Patriots loss I can't believe that's being discussed. And the Buffalo Bills, man. Congratulations to your fan base as well. We're back to discuss that in your calls in a moment.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen. Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
Let's go to the phone lines here on Peacock and Sirius XM. Joining us here, let's go to Chris in LA right here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's up, Chris?
Hey, Rich. Big fan.
Thanks, brother.
Love what you guys do.
Thank you.
Big part of my day every day.
Love it.
Thanks, man.
So before I even say this, I know the answer is money and the league gets an extra game. And maybe this is an overreaction Monday, but I don't think we need seventh seeds in the playoffs if we're going to get trash games like we got yesterday. I mean,
wait,
I know the first quarter was interesting.
Hold on, Chris.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is that part of your overreaction?
Just wait. No, just keep going.
Oh, no, did I step on it?
No, you're good.
It's all right. Okay. Invariably, it'll happen.
The first quarter was interesting in the Chiefs game, and I know the Eagles put up some points after the Bucs lit off the gas. But I'd rather just go back to two byes if this is what we're going to get. I mean, maybe it's good for the league, but tell that to Tristan Wirfs. And Tristan went down hard. What if they lost him, too? I just think it's silly.
Thanks for the call, Chris. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
He's not wrong. I mean, that's not a wrong supposition. The 2-7 games last year, okay, Bills Colts was a 2-7 game last year, and Phillip Rivers kind of set the bar high. That's easily the high watermark of a 7 seed in the first 2 years of this happening, because the other high watermark, one would say, from last year's 7 seed was Trubisky prematurely setting off the slime on that one touchdown that got called back on the first ever Nickelodeon game. Other than that, the Saints just spanked the Bears in that game. And then the 2-7 games this year, I mean, the Steelers did take a 7-0 lead, and that was the end of it. And then the Eagles looked terrible. Terrible yesterday. Terrible. And Tristan Wirfs is hurt. I mean, if you could choose, not named Brady, the five players that the Bucs could ill afford to lose now.
Well, he's first, I think.
I think Evans would be first, certainly with the rest of their offense, the way that they're out Godwin and obviously Antonio Brown strip sacked himself. You'd have to go Evans, and then you'd probably go Wirfs, unless you want to choose someone on the defense as well.
Yeah, Levante David or
Shaq Barrett, who came up with an interception.
Yeah.
But Wirfs would absolutely be one of the first names out of your mouth.
For sure. I mean, he's the only player in the last 2 years to not miss a single play. He's an all-pro in his second season. I mean, the guy's amazing. And he went down second play of the game.
Tried to come back, and it was obvious that he couldn't continue. And you know what? It didn't matter. Tom Brady's just still freaking amazing. He still finds everybody.
Tom Brady was taking sacks, though, once he went down.
I know.
But
they still put 30 up. Game was over. Like, yeah. Blaine Gabbert knew he was going to get some action. Literally, in the first quarter, he knew. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show. Look, I know what I'm talking about when I talk about this subject matter. Okay? When you're a team that takes it in the chops all the time, from one particular team in your division as well, and you draft a quarterback in the first round high up, you hope, you are hoping against hope that this guy is the way out. Because when one team beats your brains in and year out, it feels like there's no way out. Ever. Closest I ever got to that was Mark Sanchez in the last 20-some-odd years. Mark Sanchez drafted fifth overall. He went 1-1, by the way, against the Patriots in his first year. They split. And then he split in his second year, too. And then that second year ended with him being the only quarterback, and the Jets the only team to date, to beat Tom Brady in the playoffs with Brady getting the bye week and a divisional playoff game. Brady is 11-1. In those situations in his career. And the Jets beat him.
Game wasn't even close.
Okay. Well, it was on the scoreboard. It was 28-21 was the final. Yeah, but even then, the Jets were, and all of our fan base was like wondering, still got to see more. That's still Brady out there. They went 14-2, the team that we beat. And then sure enough, Sanchez didn't win another game against the Patriots again as the starter of the Jets. And as if there was still any hope left, it was dashed when he ran into the taint of his teammate
on Thanksgiving.
So I know what I'm talking about here. When you draft the quarterback like that, you hope that that quarterback turns into Josh Allen and that that quarterback turns in the performance that we saw Josh Allen turn in against the Patriots this weekend. This is what we call the good stuff. This is what you hope for. This is what you dream about. I cannot imagine how Bills fans must be feeling today. Certainly since when Mac Jones only threw three passes and they ran it 200-some-odd yards in their previous visit to Western New York earlier this year and took the first of the three games that they would eventually play. It made maybe Bills fans even think, oh gosh, maybe here we go again. That the page hasn't been turned, despite last year's AFC Championship game appearance, that maybe Belichick and the Patriots have put something together here that is similar to the previous run, and oh my gosh, we're going to have to deal with this again, aren't we? And then they go into New England towards the end of the season, wresting back control of their own destiny, which they then turned into a division title and the right to host New England at home and spank them repeatedly with the first ever instance of seven possessions, all touchdowns, no field goals, no turnovers. The only times the Bills possessed the ball and it did not result in a touchdown was they knelt the end of the first half kickoff. They just took a kneel after kicking it, after receiving it, and then the victory formations at the end of the game. That's never happened. Ever in the history of the National Football League postseason. It's never happened even in the wildest dreams of Bills fans to do this to Bill Belichick and the Patriots to end their season. Josh Allen's first touchdown of the night, he said he was throwing away. Dawson Knox with a tremendous grab. And then Mac Jones was terrific in his first career playoff possession. But Micah Hyde ended that best opportunity for the Patriots to score and make this a game with the most remarkable touchdown, saving interception I've seen in the playoffs since Malcolm Butler. I got to be honest with you, right on the goal line too. And it changed the fortune of that game because that looked like Mac Jones was coming out like a house of fire. That doused the flame, and then Josh Allen got the ball back. And see you later. What a night for Buffalo Bills fans. When Josh Allen was drafted, you couldn't dream of this scenario, and it happened. and he's a face of a franchise. He's a good kid in the community. What a dream come true. And this game against the Chiefs to wrap up divisional playoff weekend is going to be off the hook. Mahomes coming in off of a 5-touchdown performance in 10.5 minutes, and the Bills doing that to New England. A rematch of the AFC Championship game from the year before. Wow. What a performance. Still here on Peacock. Yeah, you
know, N'Keal Harry would have dropped that pass anyway.
No, so no, and then Brandon Bolden did too. Another one.
I'd like to play
here,
before.
And here are two aspects of the Patriots' loss I don't get. First of all, wondering if Mac Jones is the right guy. Are you kidding me? Like the season didn't happen? Playoffs are very, very difficult for first-time quarterbacks to navigate and negotiate. The December season is a very difficult part of the season to navigate and negotiate. I know I was having my fun saying that this looked like 2001, and there were times when it did, where this quarterback in his first foray with Bill was looking terrific and got it. The light's on, man. And he's got an ability. His first drive was terrific. Two huge third down throws. He picked one up with his legs. He looked like Josh Allen at that one point. And of course it went south after that. I mean, it's so the quite like, is Mac the right guy? What are you? You want to try Zach Wilson on for size, New England fans? You want to try him on for size? You want to try on Justin Fields for size? Who do you want to do? What do you want? Davis Mills? Who's the only other quarterback who came close to Mac Jones' success and also conversation starter about how New England's got their guy, knows exactly what to do with their system. I don't understand the, is he the right guy? I saw a lot of that conversation. I don't know if it's in New England or not. I haven't heard yet from my brother-in-law
yet.
I'm
weirdly not concerned about the offense at all. I'm really more worried about the defense.
No, I think you should get a receiver who can take the top off. You know what I mean? Like, not named Aguilar. You could use a little bit more firepower there.
Totally. But in terms of, like, levels of what freaks me out about the future coming off of this game, the defense needs totally retooled, restructured, and reloaded. Like, Hightower, McCourty, all these old guys, gone. Like, they can't play anymore.
The second thing, too, that I still couldn't get was the Belichick's going to be back for 2022.
Yeah,
conversation.
He's going to retire?
Where the hell did that come from?
Yeah, it's so
what?
Bizarre.
He looks reinvigorated and he's apologizing to media for being short. Like, he's a more well-rounded Belichick.
Yeah,
that's what he's going to do. He's going to walk away after this one. Got it. After taking in the chops like that to Buffalo. In Buffalo. Yeah. Come on.
We'll take him.
Yeah, right.